This is Sports Talk with Phil Kornblut, Chris Bergen, and Pat Daniel. Sports Talk is heard across the state on radio affiliates of the Sports Talk Media Network and is streaming live on sportstalksc.com, as well as Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. The South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number to call in is 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now, here are Phil, Chris, and Pat with tonight's edition of Sports Talk.
Welcome in, everybody. Friday edition of Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network. Hope you're having a great afternoon heading into the weekend. Enjoy, well, here in the Midlands, some nice weather. Of course, the rain is coming, impacting the baseball schedule once again. South Carolina and Auburn going to open up that series at Founders Park tonight, and then they'll just go from there and see if they have to play two tomorrow or if they can stay on schedule and spread out the series through Sunday. Clemson playing a doubleheader at Boston College today because of the weather in New England. Tigers have won the first game of the doubleheader, getting underway with the second here in a little bit. We'll update you on everything that's going on with that and other baseball around the state and around the SEC and the ACC. Of course, it's day two of the NFL draft in Kansas City. Round one was held last night, rounds two and three tonight, and they'll wrap it up on Saturday. Dr. Rick Sanford will rejoin us tonight at the bottom of this hour to talk about round one, how he viewed things, surprises, disappointments, and get his thoughts on what to look forward to going into the weekend. Of course, Dr. Rick, a former first-round pick himself, and a guy who keeps up with the comings and the goings around the NFL draft. They go racing this weekend at Dover. They've moved that race up to a 1 o'clock start on Sunday because of the weather in Delaware. And Jeff Owens will join us in the fast lane. And George Bryan and Robbie Timms joining us with birdies, bogeys, and biceps around the states of South Carolina. We talk about the golf world and physical fitness and working the two of those together, how you can be physically fit and also swing a golf club in a good way. All that's coming your way tonight here on Sports Talk, plus recruiting, and we'll take some phone calls. Phone number is 888-898-2525, South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number here on the program. I'm at the home studio tonight. Pat Daniel is at the downtown studio tonight. And Chris Bergen will be joining us from one of his vacation estates. He's left the home estate, the Bergie Palace in Sardis, and gone to one of his vacation homes. He's got so many vacation homes. I'm not sure if he's in Miami Beach or Panama City or Las Vegas or just where he's located tonight.
You know how it is, Phil. You can't hide money. You've got to take advantage of it when you can.
Obviously, Coastal Carolina pays you well. They pay you very well.
Actually, not far. I could take a pitching wedge, I think, and actually hit Smitty's house from here. I'm actually down in Georgetown for the weekend, so hanging out in Smitty land.
Well, you and Smitty ought to get together and break bread.
You would think that would be smart. We could have actually gotten together, and actually the two of us could have tag-teamed the show tonight. Mm-hmm. That would have actually been smart.
Now you'll have your chance.
Had I had the forethought to do that.
Yeah, you'll have your chance with that coming up. Of course, the big story of the day around here involves South Carolina football, as Jimmy Lindsey, defensive line coach at South Carolina, is leaving to go to LSU. That was reported this afternoon. First, I think, on Football Scoop, and then it was picked up by Matt Lennitz from On3. And then his wife confirmed it herself with a tweet thanking everybody at South Carolina. So Jimmy Lindsey, a good coach for South Carolina, did a good job developing the players in his two-plus seasons with the Gamecocks, one of the original hires for Shane Beamer. He had worked at Illinois prior to coming to South Carolina, but before that, he worked under Clayton White at Western Kentucky. So before we talk about what might be happening coming in, let's talk about what's happening going out here. So they're losing a good coach and a good recruiter in Jimmy Lindsey, and I think you have to just consider the fact that LSU must have come in with an offer that South Carolina could not meet. I mean, why would you leave Why would you leave what you have in Columbia, an up-and-coming program with a head coach you love working for, with a defensive coordinator you're very comfortable with, having the authority to coach the defensive front, and having grown up just across the border in North Carolina, a lot of personal reasons to stay right there in Columbia? My guess is, without knowing any of the details or any of the facts, that LSU just came in with a big offer, a big financial offer to lure him away. Have you seen anything along those lines or any further details?
I have not, Phil, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he is taking the same job at LSU, correct? He's going from D-line coach at USC to D-line coach at LSU. So basically you would think it's a parallel sort of move. So it has to be money, right, or just a change of scenery. I mean, there are a lot of things that play into coaches' decisions, especially assistants to move. And certainly Jimmy Lindsay has done a nice job at South Carolina, clearly enough that LSU was interested in him. The one thing you hate it if you're Shane Beamer here, is the timing. Spring practice is over. The guys are finishing up final exams, and they're going to be gone for a couple of weeks before they come back. So you hope Shane Beamer's already got somebody he's figured out in the pipeline that he can make a quick call and fill that position relatively quickly, but certainly not going to have the continuity that I think he would have hoped going into fall workouts.
Yeah, you wonder if Beamer will rely on his own personal contacts from his coaching stops, maybe at Oklahoma, maybe at Georgia, or is it more of a Clayton White call here as a defensive coordinator, somebody that he knows, somebody he's worked with or coached before, and he is comfortable with, since it's going to be a situation where this person works under him as a defensive coordinator. So we'll see what direction that moves in as far as South Carolina is concerned. So it's the second new hire for Shane Beamer since the end of the season. Of course, he has a new offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach. So this happens. This happens. You know, as much as you like to talk about welcome home or all in up at Clemson, whatever slogan you want to use, it is a business. And I understand, I used to not understand, but I understand now. I've come full circle on this. I understand now why the players made the argument, those who supported opening things up for the players, understand why they feel like, hey, if coaches can freely move and break contracts, and I'm pretty sure Jimmy Lindsay's breaking a contract here, right? I have to go back and look at the details, but I think he was one of the coaches who had a multi-year contract, so he would be walking away from his contract at South Carolina. But you don't usually hold assistant coaches to that, because – then that hurts you when you try to go and pull somebody away from their contract at some other school. But I could see the argument that people have made all these years. Hey, coaches up and leave. Why can't players up and leave?
Well, that's an interesting point you bring up, too, about is this truly a lateral move? We see the forest for the trees. We look at South Carolina, we look at Clemson, and we can't understand, just as fans and media that cover those programs, why anybody, you would think things are going extremely well at both stops. You should be happy there. But, I mean, this is an LSU program that I think surprised everybody last year with how well they played. And maybe he looks at what Brian Kelly has already installed at LSU and feels like that might be a real good stepping stone for any further desires he has above just being a D-line coach. Maybe he's looking on down the road at defensive coordinator opportunities, possibly a head coaching opportunity. Maybe he wants to jump to the NFL. So there are a lot of reasons that you might want to go to LSU from South Carolina, even though on the surface it at least appears it's somewhat of a lateral move. And on the flip side, Phil, you talked about players leaving. That would be my next concern for South Carolina. Would they lose somebody along the DL because Jimmy Lindsay is is going, and even worse, would they go with him to LSU?
Yeah, anything's possible. Anything's possible for today's players, because they do have the freedom right now to take that one-time transfer, and you can do it when the window is open, and right now that window is open for a little while longer. So who knows if a player is not happy with the fact that he is leaving, and you're a player and you enjoyed playing under him, and now you've got to deal with learning under a new coach. Jimmy Lindsay, looking at the latest summary of Gamecock assistant coaches, Jimmy Lindsay got a one-year extension. His contract was to run through the end of 2024. So he was under contract with the Gamecocks for this season and next season. He still had 2 years to go.
One more detail there, Phil, as well. A term within that contract is that he would owe South Carolina $300,000 for terminating the contract in year one of its life. So I may be wrong with this, but if he just got that extension a few months ago, I certainly would believe this is first year of that contract. So it looks
like he may be owing
the Gamecocks some money.
You're exactly right, and I was just getting to that. A salary of $475,000 with a buyout of $300,000 in the first year. And this is the first year because this was done back in January of this year. So now what happens is they negotiate that. They might even waive it, or LSU might pick it up. But that doesn't seem to be a problem for this kind of movement, you know. Garrett Riley had no trouble leaving TCU, I'm sure, under contract to go to Clemson, and I'm sure there was something done to alleviate that situation. So Jimmy Lindsay was a good coach. I'm not going to sit here and say this is not a tough thing for South Carolina. Will they find a suitable, equal, or better replacement? Time will tell. But I thought he did a good job developing guys like Pickens and Huntley and Hemingway. Now, Hemingway may end up playing on the outside some this year, but those guys in the middle, I thought he did a pretty good job with those guys over the years, Chris.
I would agree, and I think South Carolina had to be pleased all the way across the board with what they got out for the most part with their defense. Clearly, there were concerns and holes about their ability to stop the run, but for the most part, especially the back end of their defense, did a really nice job against the pass, and I think you're right. I think he developed those guys along the front down linemen. I thought he did a terrific job, and I think that is a big loss. I don't think we can undersell losing a coach like Jimmy Lindsay. Now, certainly Shane Beamer can go out and find somebody capable, maybe a talented replacement to fill that void, but it is going to be a void. And my concern, as I mentioned a couple of moments ago, if you're Shane Beamer, is does he also, by virtue of going to LSU, end up taking a player or two, maybe not intentionally, but somebody who likes playing for Jimmy Lindsay and may want to go continue to play for him, transferring over to LSU during the offseason?
Yeah, have to wait and see what happens. So Shane Beamer in the market for a new defensive line coach, an interior defensive line coach. Okay, Clemson beat Boston College 9-7 in the first game of that doubleheader up at Boston. So that's a big win for Clemson. We talked with Coach Backich earlier in the week and talked about how this would be a good opportunity RPI-wise for Clemson because they're playing a nationally ranked team and also a team that they are competing with in the ACC in their division. And Boston College is having a really good year to this point. And this, you know, Clemson has come on strongly. Their RPI was 22 going into the weekend, and they just get they get a Q1 win on the road. And as we look at the live RPI and see what has happened, just with that win, the Tigers have gone from 22 to 15 today.
Wow!
In the RPI by virtue of that win. That is, for them, in the category of Q1 wins, that makes the Tigers 10-9 in Q1 games this year. That is, you know, that's not particularly impressive. You know, obviously one game over 500 in that category, but they're starting to pick that up. In fact, they are 10-9 in the ACC now. They get over 500 for the first time in a long time. They were down in the ACC record-wise there for a good bit. They're now 10-9 in ACC play with that win today, and the Tigers have a nice little streak going now. They have won. They swept NC State. They beat Kennesaw. They beat Boston College. So that's, what, six in a row and eight of their last nine. That loss to Georgia sticking out through in the middle. So eight of their last nine. And they're underway in game number two. They're already in the bottom of the third inning, and there is no score in this one. In fact, there's no score, and there are no hits. Austin Gordon on the mound for Clemson. Going back to the 9-7 win for the Tigers, just to give you a quick recap, they trailed 2-1 after an inning, scored three in the fourth to go up 4-2. BC scored a run in the fourth and then two in the fifth. So they led it 5-4. Tigers come back with a four-run seventh inning, well, a single run in the sixth, and then four runs in the seventh to take the lead, and BC scores two in the eighth. Not enough. Clemson wins at 9-7. 9-12-0 for the Tigers. They left 5. 7-11-0 for Boston College. They left 8. And for the Tigers today, let's see. Wright had a 3-run homer in that 4th inning rally. Grice had another homer, a solo homer, in the 6th inning. And those are the two long balls for the Tigers today as far as the overall offensive summary. Grice had a 3-hit day, is now batting 320. He had a couple of doubles along with that home run. So he led the offense along with Wright, who had 3 hits along with the home run. On the mound, Darden went 4 innings, 7 hits, 5 earned runs, 2 walks. He struck out 1. Smith pitched to a couple of hitters, gave up a couple of hits. He was pulled. Clayton comes on. He works the next 4 innings. 2 hits, a couple of runs, both earned. He walked 3, struck out 2. He picked up the win to go to 4-0, and Ammons came in to close it out. They like him in that closer's role. He set him down in order with 3 fly ball outs in the bottom of the ninth to pick up the save. So Clayton gets the win to go to 4-0. Ammons picks up the save, his second on the season, and now the Tigers are going for the doubleheader sweep. They are scoreless in the top of the fourth. So we'll keep a close watch on that. You got South Carolina and Auburn tonight, and South Carolina looking to prove they're the number one team in the country, at least according to the RPI, and, of course, trying to protect their very slim lead in the SEC going into games this weekend. The Gamecocks are 34-6 overall. They are 13-4 in the SEC. LSU is 12-5, just behind. Kentucky is 11-7. So South Carolina facing an Auburn team, which is missing, has missed for most of the season, its number one starter. No big surprise there. And the Gamecocks will be going with their regular rotation that they have turned to here in the last few weeks after the injury to Noah Hall. So, of course, the other big item tonight over at USC is they are retiring Kip Bauknight's jersey, number 14, at about 6:40 this evening. So that should be a big deal there over at USC. Coastal Carolina's got a big
Will
series.
Sanders.
Go ahead.
No pressure on Will Sanders to step up and pitch well tonight, is there, with Kip Bauknight on hand?
No, absolutely. and you got big series involving Coastal and big series involving College of Charleston tonight and other teams around the state. So we'll be checking on those scores for you as we move on through the program tonight. Quick thoughts from you on the draft last night. My first thought is, if you are a projected number one pick and you have a smoking hot girlfriend and you're sitting in the green room, it's best not to bring the smoking hot girlfriend with you if you're not going to be picked in the first round. Poor Will Levis sitting in there. I've seen the pictures. Got his mom on one side, the smoking hot girlfriend on the other side, and their facial expressions are like, God, I can't believe this is happening to us. But you know what? Hey, you didn't make it in the first round. You'll be picked early tonight. You won't make the big bonus money to sign, but as I was listening today, one of the advantages is, if you're not picked in the first round, you only have to go 4 years before you hit free agency versus 5 years if you're a first-round pick.
Had sort of 3 takeaways from last night. First, props to the Carolina Panthers for not screwing up the first overall pick. I think they did exactly what they should have done. Bryce Young, take him off the board, and let's see what happens from there. I thought the Texans did a really nice job of being able to work it where they were able to get both C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson back-to-back picks. I don't think you can argue that the Texans probably won round one of the draft. Second thing, I want to find all those NFL scouts that we were hearing from this past week who said they didn't want to touch Clemson, especially defensive linemen, because of the Clemson curse. If that's really the case, how do two of the Tigers go in the first round, as they did last night with both Miles Murphy and Brian Bresee? And the third thing, to Will Levis, were the reports that inaccurate that we also got this week? I guess they were, that he was going to be the number one overall selection, or is he a pathological liar that he was just telling everybody, hey, the Panthers have already talked to me, and I'm going to be the number one pick? I mean, how did we miss? I don't want to lump us in there because none of us said this stuff, but I don't want to lump, you know, I don't want to – excuse me, Finn.
Does Finn not know what time it is?
He normally doesn't
know.
Does he not know? He's out of his comfort zone.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand how they missed on Will Levis that badly that he goes from perhaps the number one overall selection, certainly with inside the top 10, to not even being picked in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you wonder how about all that happening. There was a talk on the NFL Network about an injury that came up late to report, maybe like even like hours before the draft or a day before the draft, about some kind of a toe injury or something that might have hurt him. And you know what happens, of course, the quarterbacks are hot commodities for the early picking teams. And why are those teams picking early? Usually because they need a quarterback. Once you get past that first little wave, you got a bunch of teams that aren't looking for a quarterback. You might be a good quarterback. There's just not a team that needs you from, say, picks 10 through 31, or however many there are.
That's a good point.
And so you end up sliding. And, you know, look, we've seen it happen before. Everybody knows the story, what Tom Brady was a late pick, and Aaron Rodgers slid to the, 23rd pick, I think it was. So it doesn't define you. You can't – people make a big deal of it, and he's catching a lot of grief about it and a lot of jokes about him being there and being left in the green room, and he's not going to be there tonight, I've read. And it shouldn't define you. My gosh, just because you're not a first-rounder, I mean, the meat and potatoes of a football team will be put together tonight and tomorrow. You get the shiny stuff, okay? You got your jewelry last night, okay? Your bling, and you hang that around your neck. You put that on your wrist. But your meat and potatoes coming up here the next two nights. So this is when you really build your teams. And look, if there's a team out there that needs somebody to compete at quarterback, maybe not necessarily come in and be the quarterback or to give them a bit of a backup situation, then he's going to get picked by that team, and he'll get picked pretty early, you know, at this point. So we'll hear what Dr. Rick has to say about that coming up after the bottom of the hour break. And, we got racing this weekend, of course. I mentioned that at Dover. Jeff Owens will join us, and they are playing golf down in Mexico. We got a bunch of local guys playing. George Bryan and Robbie Thames will be joining us here at 7:30 to talk more about that. We'll have a recruiting report for you coming up as well. So we got all that going on. And am I forgetting anything? I think we've pretty much covered
everything.
Oh, I should mention, of course, I don't have my camera on. I'm wearing my Celtics series victory cap tonight after taking care of the.
You should be proud of that.
The dastardly Hawks last night. Well, it took a little while to get control, get our hands around that game last night. We finally did in about the last 4 minutes. So, hey, got time to relax a little bit. I tell you what, if you're not into the NBA, then you don't have to pay any attention to me. But if you are in the NBA, you got to love the Eastern Conference semis because you've got the Celtics and the Phillies. No two teams have met more in the playoffs over the years than those two. Heated rivals.
The Sixers.
And that's what I said, right? Philly.
Yes. You said the Phillies.
No, I thought I said Philly.
I don't think the Celtics are going to do well against Philadelphia's baseball team and vice versa. I guess.
I was talking about – did I say the Phillies or did I say Philly? I'm going to go back and listen to the tape since you like to catch me on every little slip of the tongue.
Just the funny stuff.
And then the other series, of course, the Heat and the Knicks. I get that right? The Heat and the Knicks. And they hate each other. They've hated each other for decades. That's going to be one knockdown, drag-out physical series, I would say.
I would agree. I think you're right. I think the Eastern Conference semis is probably exactly what the NBA wanted. And I'm just fascinated to figure out what the Sixers are going to bring to the table. I think the Celtics actually have an advantage because whenever that series starts, I would assume probably Sunday or Monday is when the second round will start. Boston's going to be sort of in their groove. It's going to take, I would think, Philadelphia a game or so to get back in their groove because they dispatched Brooklyn so quickly. They've been sitting around for a while.
Okay, you've gotten support from the money coach, Fran Halloran. He says I said Phillies. So I tip my cap to you for the catch. Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston,
I think it would be an interesting matchup,
Celtics.
Though.
Which one? Oh, the Celtics and the Phillies?
The Phillies and the Celtics, yeah.
All right, we got Rick Sanford coming up.
Imagine a scrapbook filled with all your favorite memories of 75 years of NASCAR gone by. Now imagine that scrapbook going 190 miles per hour.
Have you ever?
No, I've never!
You don't have to imagine it. You need to get to Darlington, where the drivers of today tackle the track too tough to tame, just like they did your first time. NASCAR Throwback Weekend at Darlington Raceway, May 12th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at darlingtonraceway.com.
We are back at Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope everybody's in a great mood. I'm in a great mood. Chris, you in a great mood?
I am in a fabulous mood.
Yeah, Pat, you in a great mood going into the weekend? I know you are. Pat's always in a great mood. And Chris, like I said, he's at one of his vacation bungalows in Georgetown. Who wouldn't be happy about hanging out in Georgetown for the weekend? So let me update the baseball. Clemson beat BC 9-7, the first of two, and BC has a 1-0 lead on the Tigers now in the top of the fifth inning. They have pushed across a run. They did so in the bottom of the fourth. They now lead Clemson 1-0 in the top of the fifth. South Carolina and Auburn are beginning underway just a little bit, and we'll update some other scores for you as the evening progresses. But right now, let's turn our attention back to the NFL draft. Round one last night, rounds two and three coming up tonight, and then they'll wrap it up on Saturday. We welcome back to the program University of South Carolina's number one first-round draft pick, number 25 on the back of his jersey, but number one in your hearts, Dr. Rick Sanford. Good evening, sir. How are you?
I am doing great, Phil. I hope y'all are doing well.
We are. We are. Back in your day, I mean, they didn't have a green room, and you guys didn't congregate at one location or anything like that and have to sweat through it like these guys do, did you?
No, I got a call in the athletic dormitory room. That's what, informing me that I had been selected. I looked at my wife last night, Phil. I said, can you just imagine what I've missed through my life here? I mean, looking at how they treat these kids nowadays, it's like royalty, man, royalty.
Absolutely. Well, look, I mean, they are investing, these first-rounders, right? They are investing a ton of money in these guys. They're going from rags to riches in some cases. Well, not too well, I guess Bryce Young was already a millionaire quarterback in college, as Nick Saban pointed out a couple of years ago. Hey, I got a quarterback making $1 million, okay? So he's not exactly going from rags to riches. He's going from rich to extremely filthy rich, right?
Well, if he was making $1 million, I think his package total is right at 39.6 million or something like that. So yeah, he's making a little bit more now.
Well, did anything really – now, of course, you know, the Levis thing, I don't know if you were surprised by that or not. What did you think about that? Were you falling into the conversations leading up to the draft that he might be one of the first four quarterbacks to go? Or did you ever buy into that?
No. I didn't think Stroud – I mean, I was surprised that the Texans took Stroud, but, you know, it didn't surprise me when they turned right around and traded to get Will Anderson. So – you know, so they gave up a lot, though. I mean, if you look at that on paper, that's a lot of I don't know, real estate to give up, you might say, because they're, you know, this Will Anderson better be a player, and Stroud sure better be a player, because if they don't produce, the Texans are going to be in trouble for years to come. But in terms of their picking, I just felt it was just a lot to give up. I think they really wanted Will Anderson, but felt like they had to, you know, be in a position where they're going to move to take some a quarterback, and that's pretty much how it happened, I think. Levis, it didn't surprise me. I looked at it the other day. You remember I mentioned it to you that there was some talk, you know, that he really wasn't a team player. You know, there were some things that came out in some of his interviews, and he pretty much self-centered kind of kid, and then there was something about a toe injury that he had that was like recent, or either it was not revealed. So, you know, does that make him not a really good football player? You get picked anywhere in the draft, you're a pretty good athlete. So you see guys that, you know, make it that are free agents now. You see guys that are make it in sixth and seventh round. So if you look at the draft board starting tonight, you'll see that probably there are about 9 of the top 20 picks. Any of those teams would be quarterback searching. So I suspect that Levis will probably go off, you know, within – I don't think he's going to go off early second round, but I think that, you know, someone – it's a possibility Detroit may take him. Mm-hmm. Also a possibility Tampa may take him. These teams are picking pretty high tonight. So, you know, if you look at the draft order, there's a distinct possibility, I think, that he'll probably find his way to a team here in probably the top 15 picks of the second round.
And in actuality, going back to what I said a minute ago, he will be among the top 4 quarterbacks if he's the first one taken tonight, because 3 were picked last night. He would be the 4th, but I think he was thinking he'd be among the top 4 or 5 picks as those teams were picking quarterbacks. But I said this earlier, Rick, and I'll ask your opinion about this. I mean, what happens with quarterbacks is the teams that are picking early, they're usually picking early because they're not good, obviously, and they're not good because they need better quarterbacks. And so they take quarterbacks early. And if you're not in that group, the next teams who are better teams to even really good teams or great teams, they're set at quarterback. So there's no team that really needs a quarterback. And that's why if you're not in that initial little group, you end up sliding on down the line till you find a team that needs a quarterback in maybe the second or third round.
Well, it may work out in his favor, Phil. I mean, because if you look at some of the teams that are coming up, you know, I think he'd be on a better team with Detroit than any of these kids. He'd be on a better team with probably Tennessee, you know, who is going to be picking early in the second round as well. So there's some, you know, like I said, there are some teams out there. The Raiders are another team that's picking early in the second round. I think Seattle, I mean, there's another team that's picking early in the second round. And those are good football teams, you know, potentially a lot better than the teams that, you know, Bryce Young and Stroud are going to, and certainly Anthony Richardson. So I think you're spot on in what you're saying. You know, if you're a quarterback and you're getting picked high, you're going to a pretty bad team generally.
All right, so the Panthers did the expected, and they took Bryce Young. I mean, if you've got the number one pick, and that pick is a quarterback, you have to hit a home run, don't you? I mean, he has got to be successful, or it can set your program back many years. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely. I think it, you know, this is Scott Fitterer, this is a live or die pick for him, quite honestly. You know, they may say that, you know, well, Frank Reich, I mean, you look at his job will be on the line in the years to come as well. I mean, this is top jobs, and if he doesn't hit and become a star, certainly the Panthers are going to have to be a threat. And fortunately, they're in a division. If you look at the quarterbacks in that division now, he might be the best quarterback coming in. I mean, that's kind of scary. I mean, but it's kind of good for the Panthers. So, you know, I think that that he will perform and he'll do well. I think it was an excellent pick for the Panthers, quite honestly. I don't think, you know, there was a better quarterback out there. He was clearly head and shoulders above the other quarterbacks in this draft, no doubt about it. But, you know, it really didn't surprise me that much about Levis, Phil. But, you know, it is going to be interesting to see where he does land. I think that he would do very, very well with a team like the Raiders. And the reason I say that, you've got Josh McDaniel there as a head coach, and also the guy that develops quarterbacks. You know, he was with the Patriots for years and years. So, Tom Brady wasn't too bad under Josh McDaniels.
I think those two kind of needed each other. You know, maybe McDaniels needed him more than Brady needed him, since Brady went elsewhere and still won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, that's possible, Phil. I mean, I certainly think McDaniel is an excellent, you know, developer of quarterbacks, and I think that that's where it's going to have to be for a guy like Anthony Richardson and a guy like Levis, because those guys are going to need much more training than a guy like Stroud and Young do. I thought those two guys were head above everyone else up there, but Stroud, not near as good a football player, I don't think, as Bryce Young.
Sure.
Dr. Rick Sanford back with us here tonight on Sports Talk, recapping round one of the NFL draft. And, Rick, I think this is an interesting story, and one that Phil will enjoy, because he wasn't a five-star, he wasn't a three-star, but the first guy that plays a similar position that you did to go off the board was Devin Witherspoon last night at the Seattle selection, number 5 overall out of Illinois. And here was a kid that had no real offers coming out of high school, didn't even start playing football until his junior year. Can you give us an idea as to how difficult that is to transform yourself into an NFL first-round player in that relatively short period of time?
I tell you, I'm not sure how he did it, quite honestly. I mean, he's obviously a tremendous athlete. I think he brings to the game a little bit more toughness than most quarterbacks and cornerbacks that you see in the NFL. And you know, he has the ability to lock down receivers as well. You know, I think his big thing was just the ability to be not really get himself out of position a lot. That's the main thing about being a defensive back. I mean, you know, nowadays you see a lot of guys that take a lot of chances and, you know, they get beat a lot, but then they make some plays here and there and people think they're really great football players. I don't think guys that do that are great football players. I think the great football players that are guys that play down to down. And make plays down to down. I mean, and are smart. And obviously, this kid's a smart kid. And I don't even know how to explain that, Chris. You know, how do you explain a kid that's played what? Now, what, 6 years of football? I mean, total, yeah. And you're the number one defensive back taken in the draft. So I don't know that that's even explainable, quite honestly, other than the fact that he's a tremendous athlete.
Dr. Rick Sanford joining us here on Sports Talk again. Thanks so much for your time. In recent years, we've seen NFL teams start to pair former college teammates together. Offensively, we've seen the Bengals taking Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, the Dolphins taking Tua Tagovailoa and Jalen Waddle, the Eagles with Jalen Hurts and Devontae Smith, and now sticking with the Eagles defensively, this year they've taken defensive tackle Jalen Carter last night, along with edge rusher Nolan Smith. And just last year, they took two other of their former Georgia teammates, all four now off of that 2021 National Championship team, defensive tackle Jordan Davis and linebacker N'Kobe Dean. What are your thoughts on that? Is this what we're starting to see as a blueprint for NFL teams moving forward? Are they searching for that camaraderie, like, right out of the gate? Or just what are your thoughts on teams doing this approach now?
Well, I think it's fortunate. I think that, you know, because you got to remember, there's other people that are picking you know, and have the opportunity to pick these kids, and for whatever reason they don't. I think Howie Roseman has done a tremendous job of building that football team, and he's no dummy. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you know, you look at that 2021 Georgia defense. I mean, it was tremendous, and now he's got four players off that defense, and, you know, you surround that with other NFL talent. I mean, that's going to be a pretty stout group up front for Philadelphia this year, which won't hurt my feelings, though, you know, because they play the Cowboys twice a year. So that'll be just fine with me.
Okay, I got a personal question, personal for my Packers. Yeah. Now, I doubt there's any other team, maybe you know this, you maybe haven't studied it, but I doubt there is another team in the NFL that has ignored offensive players with their first-round pick since 2005 more than the Packers. Maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong. 2005, they took Aaron Rodgers. Since then, and there were 2 years they didn't have a first-round pick. Since then, since 2005, they've taken in the first round three offensive players, a quarterback in Jordan Love and two tackles. So forget about Love. They haven't added in the first round any skill position players on the offensive side. And, I mean, going back to 2005 when Rodgers was taken, that was one of his complaints there towards the end. Hey, you're not drafting great talent, offensive talent, in the first round. The Packers took a defensive end last night. Excellent player, obviously. Rick, their opinion must be we can get running backs and receivers later on, and we need to address more important needs with our first-round picks?
That's the way it appears, Phil. I don't know what their philosophy is. I don't understand it, quite honestly. I've never understood why they would never. It seemed like they were against wide receivers for some reason. I don't know. Or they just felt like that we'll just find them down the board. And you know, and they've done it. You know, you look at the receivers that they've been able to accumulate. I mean, they've done a heck of a job. Mm-hmm. You know, in the past, to have guys that Rodgers could throw to. I mean. You know, Devontae Adams wasn't Swiss cheese over there, you know, when he was in Green Bay. So
he was not a first-round pick. He was not a first-round pick.
Yeah, I know.
Pick. Yeah.
Right. So it tells me that they're able to develop guys mm-hmm. somehow. And, maybe it's their coaching. Maybe it's their some type of program that they use it that maybe others don't use. I don't know. You know, you saw the Jets last night, and it had to warm my soul a little bit last night when the Jets took the kid from Iowa State, not that he's not a good football player, but he's a defensive player. And I know they were probably getting ready to turn the card in, and then Bill Belichick stepped in. And, you know, he loves to stick it to the Jets. Anytime we can stick it to the Jets, Bill, we're happy to stick it to them. Yeah. So Broderick Jones was about ready to become a New York Jet last night until Bill Belichick stepped in and said, I'm not having any of this, so I'll just move back a couple of spots and go ahead and take them, Steelers. So the Steelers got them a heck of a good player last night, and a guy, and you look and see. I mean, what are the Jets going to do now? I mean, there are a couple of tackles left that are pretty worthy that they could go after tonight here in the second and third rounds that would probably suffice for them. But if they don't address their offensive line, Aaron Rodgers is going to look like Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay last year, next year. So I can promise you that, because he's going to be on the run.
He was on the run a good bit. Last thing about Aaron Rodgers, we'll let you go. He looks like a different guy, though. He looks happy. He's got his hair cut in a normal fashion now, what I view a normal fashion, instead of that cockeyed sideways haircut he had in Green Bay last year. And the other thing is, Joe Namath said, hey, if you want number 12 and you want to, you know, keep it going because you're number 12, go ahead. And he said, nope, that belongs to Joe Namath. Not interested in having it. I'll wear number 8. And I think he won a lot of points with Jet fans with that move alone going into this thing. I think he won over a lot of people in the Jet kingdom there.
Yeah, you know, as self-centered as Aaron is, that's amazing that he's not going to take that number 12. So I was stunned, actually, that you know that he chose number 8 over number 12, because there's no better player than Aaron Rodgers. If you don't believe it, you just ask him. He'll tell you.
Well, I have a feeling he's going to have a great year with the Jets. I mean, they got good players. Like you said, if they can protect him, the defense is going to give them the ball in good field position and give them a chance where they don't have to score 30, 35 points. Their defense is for real. He saw that himself when the Jets beat the dog out of the Packers last season. And I think he's going to have a good year. He's got one of his familiar faces from the Packers has gone there as a free agent signee at wide receiver, so kind of a security blanket there. So I think he's going to do. I think he's going to do fine. We're going to let you go so you can get ready for the picks coming up at 7. Thanks a bunch. Maybe we'll catch up with you Monday night to put a ribbon on this thing if you want to join us one more time.
I'll be happy to do it, Phil. And you know what? I got to go get the smoking jacket and the glass of wine, and I'm ready to go.
There you go, my man.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you,
we'll
Dr. Rick.
Y'all
you are the man, Dr. Rick Sanford, joining us here on Sports Talk. Great stuff about the draft. From a guy who's been through the draft and a guy who follows the draft and has a feel for it. And we'll see what happens beginning tonight, a little bit after 7 o'clock. They'll get it rolling. Boston College has taken a 2-0 lead on Clemson. Now they play in the bottom of the 6th, trying to get a split of that doubleheader today. The Tigers won the opener 9-7. We'll be back in a moment.
Imagine a scrapbook. filled with all your favorite memories of 75 years of NASCAR gone by. Now imagine that scrapbook going 190 miles per hour.
Have you ever?
No, I've never!
You don't have to imagine it. You need to get to Darlington. Where the drivers of today tackle the track too tough to tame, just like they did your first time. NASCAR Throwback Weekend at Darlington Raceway, May 12th through the 14th. Get your tickets today at darlingtonraceway.com.
Founders Federal Credit Union knows your life is busy and your money is important. We are proud to offer local personalized services and convenient online services like Founders Online and the Founders app. You'll love being with us as much as we love serving you. Visit relaxjoinfounders.com or one of our 37 convenient locations to see if you qualify for membership with Founders. Relax. Win with Founders. Terms and conditions apply. Founders Federal Credit Union is federally insured by NCUA.
George Bryan for Tsunami Bar Sports, our inventor, David Abernathy, has always said Tsunami Bar technology allows us to take the training to the grass. Now I know through my sport of golf that natural agility can be converted to athletic ability. And why is this, Tsunami Robbie?
Transferring the training to the grass. This may be the most undervalued characteristic of the Tsunami flexible bar technology. The Tsunami bar action loads and unloads at the concentric and eccentric transition points. This is what we call reversal forces. And the Tsunami bar is the only bar and training device that I know of that can train these reversal forces adequately at speed.
Hey, this is Phil Kornblut. The Tsunami Bar is a terrific training device, whether you're working on your fitness or your golf game. It's convenient, it's easy to use, and you won't feel beat up afterwards. Be sure to click on the digital ad on sportstalksc.com and get 5% off any order using promo code BBB5. Don't wait. Order today.
Major Downer here from the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. Boating season is just around the corner. To make sure that your boat is ready, check your registration sticker and ensure it's current. Find your registration card, make sure your life jackets are in good shape, and check your fire extinguisher as well. For more information on boating or boat titling questions, visit dnr.sc.gov/boating.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Have you turned on the fun? Try Cash Pop from the South Carolina Education Lottery. Pick one number from 1 to 15, win up to $2,500, or play all 15 numbers, and you're guaranteed to win. Play twice a day to double your fun. It really is that easy. Visit sceducationlottery.com to get the details. Cash Pop, it's the light of the party.
All right, thanks again to Dr. Rick Samford for being with us tonight here on Sports Talk. Let's hit the phones real quick before the top of the hour. We'll continue with phone calls in the next hour, plus recruiting, Jeff Owens, George Bryan. We go to Hank in Columbia. Hank, welcome into Sports Talk. How are you? Hank, are you there, sir?
Uh-oh, may have lost Hank. He was on hold for a bit. I'll check with him off air. But if you like, we can just keep the party rolling and go to Andy in Columbia next.
Andy, welcome to Sports Talk. How are you, sir?
Hello, fellas. I'm doing great. I'll tell you what, I got to thank the 31 teams that didn't pick Will Levis, because getting all that airtime for his girlfriend was nice. I hope she's in the green room tonight. I don't care about Will Levis.
I'm telling you, that's what I said at the start of the show. I mean, if you're going to sit in there and have to suffer the indignity of not being picked when you thought you were going to go first or in the top three or four, and you got the smoking hot babe sitting next to you, that's tough.
At least you're going back to your hotel room with her. That's a plus.
Okay, now let's keep it family-oriented, Andy. Family-oriented.
I did. All I said was you're going back to the hotel room. Anything else. Now, the Lindsay thing you were talking about, I might be wrong on this, but I thought that transfer portal in this term of transfer portal, the SEC doesn't allow interconference transfers.
They do. They do allow it.
They do allow. Are you sure?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Because
there's no restrictions on going anywhere.
Okay. Because I thought the second term transfer portal that you couldn't go in the SEC doesn't allow you to go from team to team.
When you go in the portal for a second time, you're saying? I'll have to look that up. I'm not aware. We'll check it out. Be right back.
Welcome back to Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network. You can reach the guys with the South Carolina Education Lottery lucky number, 888-898-2525. That's 888-898-2525. Now back to Phil, Chris, and Pat with the second hour of Sports Talk on the Sports Talk Media Network.
Okay, back we are. Sports Talk, Sports Talk Media Network. Okay, so I have to credit Andy with being correct. I wasn't totally wrong. I just wasn't sure. But maybe I said no, but I wasn't sure. So I guess that counts as mistake number three tonight on the mistake meter. I mispronounced Robbie's name early. Robbie's not going to be with us tonight. Like, he got mad because I mispronounced his name. Robbie Thames. I give him the English pronunciation sometime of Tim's. But no, he's not going to be with us tonight. But Robert Dargan will be with George tonight. Birdies, bogeys, and biceps coming up. And then mistake number two, slip of the brain. I called them the Phillies, not the Sixers. I think we all knew what we were talking about. And then
you don't grade on the curve, do you?
I beg your pardon?
I said you don't grade on a curve, do you, with yourself?
No, you're either right or wrong. That's the way I look at it. It's very simple. You're either right or you're wrong. So Andy is right when he said I wasn't aware of this, or maybe I was at one point but forgot. The SEC, with a new rule, prohibiting any spring portal entrant to play within the league in the 2023 season. And we'll see how long this sticks. I mean, you know, because there's so much freedom out there in, you know, lawsuits and everything else that are breaking down all barriers when it comes to player movement. I wonder how that would, I don't know. I guess the league, as a league, they can make their own rules and you have to follow it. But then again, the NCAA made their own rules and that got blown up. So I don't know how all that's
going to work.
Well,
they're not prohibiting from you transferring anywhere. Just you can't transfer within the conference, correct?
Well, you can transfer within the conference. You just can't play.
Right. Yeah,
in 2023.
But I mean, you could transfer. Let's say there's somebody at South Carolina that wanted to transfer now, and went to Clemson. They could play this coming fall. They just couldn't transfer to LSU, which was my concern when we were talking about Jimmy Lindsay earlier, and that obviously is not a problem now. But they would have to sit out at LSU.
Yeah, this is an SEC only rule.
Yeah,
right. This time. So, okay, thank you for that, Andy. Is Andy still with us? Does he have any other follow up? Anything else he wants to catch us on, or has he moved on?
Oh, he has moved on.
After I gave him all that praise about the Jets. By the way, the Mets and the Braves opening up a big series tonight in New York, so that'll be something to keep an eye on as well this weekend.
I will say real quick, though, that rule was put in place back in 2021, so it has been around now for just a few years, and we've already seen examples of it. Georgia blue-chip defensive tackle Bear Alexander, for instance, last year was expected to be the backup to Jalen Carter, ultimately taking his spot. He decided to enter the portal and looked around the SEC, then was informed of this rule, and ended up at Southern Cal.
Well, not too bad a move, you know, to go out there and market yourself at Southern Cal. Hard to sneeze at that if you get that opportunity. Quick baseball update. Clemson is down 3-0, top of the seventh. Tigers only have two hits in this game against Boston College. And Auburn has a runner on second, one out, top of the first, no score in the game against South Carolina. Just getting underway. Let's go to Hank, who's back with us now live and in person on the phones. Hank, in Columbia. Welcome in, sir. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Corn. And I was calling, I guess, to give a little bit more information. When you talked about the Lindsay move to LSU.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition, you know, anytime you get a move, you know they're going to either give you the money or move the money up a little bit. But oftentimes folks just think, well, your school just won't double the money or match the money, but it's not always that. With Lindsey, the guy that's running the defense at LSU, him and Lindsey have like a 20-year relationship, our friend. So I think this became a part of that guy going after him because of their 20-year friendship or relationship. And oftentimes, and that kind of makes a difference because it'll allow sometimes for a school to pull somebody over because within that person, you have that long-standing relationship, you might have a little bit more autonomy, a little bit more voice in what's going on. So mm-hmm. I don't think it was just a thing of him just saying, well, if I can coach the line at USC, I'll just go over and coach at LSU. It had to do with that longstanding friendship with the guy that took over the defense at LSU.
But didn't he have not 20 years, but he had a pretty long-running relationship with Clayton White going back to when he coached under him at Western Kentucky. And I think that's a big reason why he came to South Carolina. Yeah, but I hear what you're saying. Maybe he's closer to this other guy.
Yeah, I think that's what it's been said, is he's really close to the other guy. And so it's kind of like a deal. Sometimes you're working with somebody you know, but you got a deep, long relationship friend who's asking you, say they need your help, and then they're going to provide, they're going to give you a little bit more money, but they really want to work with you. And I mean, because if you look at on our officer side, a lot of Beamer's folk that he brought in have been built off of relationships. Mm-hmm. You know, every time there's a job open, there's a bunch of people that throw out a bunch of names, and it seems like he brings in somebody that has been built off of a long relationship. He hadn't really brought in somebody that he just met cold off of a interview search.
Yeah, I understand. Hey, listen, when you're hiring coaches, relationships are important, and that really goes back also to loyalty. You hire somebody you have a relationship with, you give them a chance, you maybe give them a better job, a better position, more money, and then the loyalty factor comes into play. Not that assistant coaches should never leave. We see it all the time for a variety of reasons. But I know as mm-hmm. a head coach, you certainly want to hire guys that are going to be loyal to you as long as possible and have your back and believe in the things that you believe in. Look, I'm a little bit surprised that at this point in time, and of course things can happen because LSU lost their guy. Where did their guy go?
I'm not sure where their guy went. I heard what it was, but I can't remember if it was going to someplace in the NFL or something like that. But I seem like I remember something like that. Going to the NFL, I thought, but I'm not sure, so you can't don't really quote me on that. Mm-hmm. But that's
Hank, you're right. He's going to the Denver Broncos. Jamar Cain. Yeah, okay, you're right. He's going to coach with the Broncos. Yep.
Yeah. So my memory is better than I thought it was. But that was I just wanted to share that. And then Bertie was saying at the beginning, the team to me that won the draft last night was Philadelphia. I mean,
the Phillies?
Philadelphia picked up those those defensive guys from Georgia. They won the Philly. They to me, that was a team that won the draft, because even if you look at the Jalen Carter guy, probably almost everybody in that room, knowing these athletes and just knowing the athletes around here in Columbia and Clemson and South Carolina, probably have done something kind of stupid and ignorant and been racing. But it's just been nothing that's come out of it because there's been no wreck or anything of that matter. So if that was his only question, them grabbing him with his talents, with what Philadelphia already has, to me, they won that first round. So I just want to throw that out there, and I'll hang up.
They got four of those Georgia boys now, Hank. Remember, they took two last year as well off that same defense.
Yeah, well, keep in mind, the Packers took two of the Bulldogs last year, and both of them win on the defensive line, and the linebacker – Quay Walker. Quay Walker has got greatness written all over him. Packers apparently love him. So, I mean, that Georgia defense last year, this year, great group of players, and the NFL, of course, is taking advantage of that. Yeah, Jalen Carter and Nolan Smith going in the first round of Philadelphia. Thank you, Hank. Appreciate it very much. Mm-hmm. Need to mention, of course, Clemson had two defensive players go late in the first round last night. You had Murphy going to the Bengals, and you had Bressy going to the Saints. So that adds to the long list. We were talking about this last night, of course, the story that came out from a writer, an NFL writer, citing the anonymous sources of NFL scouts, not necessarily criticizing Clemson overall for their draft history and the talent they send to the league overall, but just really talking about defensive ends because he was focusing on Miles Murphy. But Clemson put out some notes last night after those two players were picked, and the notes include the facts that Clemson has had at least one player selected in the draft in 21 consecutive years and has produced at least one first-round pick in 9 of the last 11 drafts. Clemson, Alabama, Florida, Georgia, and Ohio State are the only 5 schools with at least one first-round pick in at least 9 of the last 11 drafts. And now, under Dabo Swinney, the Tigers have had 73 players taken in the NFL draft and 38 with the two last night. That's 38 first-round picks in the history of the NFL draft from Clemson. So that's a pretty good record right there when you think of the history of the program.
So much for the Clemson curse along the defensive line. I'm not sure that those – you know, it's interesting when your job is on the line, some things you may say privately to people that sort of gets out into the media may not come to roost. I'm guessing when they realized, hey, Brian Brzee's still available, Miles Murphy's still available, they can help our club. I don't care where they play college ball. We need to bring them in.
And got,
so,
sorry,
go ahead, Pat.
Just to add one more stat here, I saw Ross Taylor tweeted out earlier today and just retweeted it onto our page. I know we don't like to pay too much attention within recruiting to 5 stars, 4 stars, and so forth, but again, just for showing the metrics, percentage of 5 stars out of high school who were then drafted into the NFL since 2012, Clemson has the highest percentage in the country. 75% of all of their 5-star recruits have ended up being drafted into the NFL. Alabama second with 68, Florida next 67, Ohio State 65, Georgia 65. Then found this interesting, the worst 5 out of the entire country. Texas, only 24% of their 5 stars ended up in the NFL, or drafted, excuse me, into the NFL. Oklahoma, 25%. Auburn, 31%. Tennessee, 40%. LSU, 47%. But Texas, with the worst, only roughly a quarter of all of their 5-star recruits reached the NFL draft.
So I guess not all 5 stars are created equally.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying. Yep. Okay, South Carolina and Auburn. Auburn has taken a 1-0 lead on the Gamecocks in the bottom of the first, but South Carolina's threatening in the bottom of the first. They have nobody out, runners on second and third. And Clemson
may
has
have
scored.
Put out the, excuse Clemson, me, Phil. I was going to say Auburn may have put the blueprint as to how to manufacture that run in the first. Base hit, move to second on a wild pitch, move to third on a ground ball out on the infield, and then steal home.
Yeah.
That's how you manufacture a run.
That's how you do it. Clemson has scored against Boston College. It's 3-1 Eagles in the bottom of the seventh. Okay, let's get to the recruiting report tonight. Got a couple things to tell you about, and then we'll get to Jeff Owens in the fast lane. Our recruiting report is brought to you by Seawells. And don't forget, of course, if you've got something coming up that requires the best in the catering business, you want to give Seawells a call and let them handle it all for you. Their phone number is 803-771-7385. They're located at 1125 Rosewood Drive, and they'll host your event, or they'll be happy to come to your venue. And all next week, make plans. You're looking for a great lunch from 11 till 2. You want to hit up the Seawells Daily Lunch and Buffet every day next week for only $13. You can't beat it. 11 to 2 over at Seawells on Rosewood Drive. So tonight in recruiting, we checked in on defensive end Dylan Stewart out of Washington, D.C. He was in for the USC spring game. He's one of the top players in the country at his position in the 2024 class. And he'd been to USC before, came back for their spring game. Talking to his coach today, Mike Hunter, he said that Stewart has not, as far as I can tell, has not talked publicly about this visit, but he did talk to his coach, who told us, of course, he enjoyed it. He really likes the atmosphere, the coaching staff. Everyone involved with the program seems to have a good relationship with them. And he went down there, enjoyed himself, a business as usual, as the coach put it. Hunter has been an active traveler. Make that Stewart has been an active traveler throughout the spring as he set up many campuses, including Georgia, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. He was scheduled for Colorado last weekend but did not go. He is going to Oregon this weekend. Next up will be official visits, and he's got three of those lined up. Georgia, June 2nd, Ohio State, June 16th, USC, June 23rd. Penn State, Michigan, and Alabama are also on his published short list. And, of course, now Stewart is also working hard on getting ready for the upcoming season, but he hears a lot from USC recruiter Sterling Lucas, and Hunter's expecting Lucas and some other Gamecock coaches to visit next week. One more note, quarterback Luke Moga of Phoenix, who was drawing some Clemson interest, committed to Oregon. He was offered by Garrett Riley while at TCU, so another potential Clemson target deciding to go elsewhere and didn't really give the Tigers a real close look this time as he has opted to go to the Oregon Ducks. So I think, you know, we'll talk about this on Monday again. We talked about it earlier. I have my questions about Clemson's quarterback recruiting here over last year and this year, even though they got Vezina that came in this year's class. Now looking at this 24 class, they are striking out. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Mm-hmm. You can't sugarcoat it. They are striking out on their top quarterback targets. Now, whoever they do get will be hailed as who they wanted and a great quarterback. Okay, that's fine. But if you follow it, you know that they are getting down the board on quarterbacks that they have pursued. Now, they never got to the offer stage with Moga, but had he come in and visited and shown more interest, it probably would have gotten to that. Okay, we'll hit the break here on Sports Talk. When we come back, it'll be time to check out the NASCAR scene on this Friday night, coming off the race at Talladega. They are at the Monster Mile. They go from the Big Monster at Talladega to the Monster Mile at Dover, which is a fun racetrack to watch races on. I really enjoy watching those races there because they're competitive, pretty high speed, and usually filled with a lot of action. We'll get Jeff Owens' take on it coming up after the break.
Hi, I'm Jim Corbett. I've been an attorney for more than 30 years. There's one thing I've learned about injury cases. It's you need the personal touch. You need the lawyer to get to know you and describe your damages. You don't want a case manager talking to an insurance company and then talking to you and then talking to maybe to a lawyer with limited experience at the last minute to try to settle a case. I talk to you. I find out what your case is about. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com. Jim at JimCorbettAttorney.com for your injury cases.
Parents ask, what's the best way to save for college? I'm State Treasurer Curtis Loftus, and my answer is always open a Future Scholar 529 College Savings Account. It's easy. You can get started online with any amount. It's flexible to adapt your child's college dreams. And you can deduct 100% of your contributions from the South Carolina state tax return. So what are you waiting for? Go to FutureScholar.com and see why it's the smart, easy way to save for college. FutureScholar.com.
Life, it has its ups and downs. Sometimes it's little things like hitting every red light or dropping your cell phone. Maybe it's the bills, rent, or pressure at work. But when it comes to the South Carolina Education Lottery, you should never feel like playing will solve everything. The lottery is a game. It's played for fun. So set a dollar amount. Expect not to win and make sure responsibilities, family, friends, and work come first. Visit PlayResponsiblySC.com.
Hi folks, this is Mike Morgan. I want to tell you about an exciting new product from my friends at Vision Air Solutions. Staying healthy in my line of work is so critical, and probably in yours as well. A large factor in all that is making sure we're breathing in healthy and safe air every day. That's where Vision Air Solutions comes in. They make sure your home has air purification for all the air pollution you can't see. Viruses, mold, bacteria, stale odors, cooking smells, and volatile organic compounds. They make sure your home is full of clean air and also offer HVAC duct cleaning and sanitation as well. Make sure you and your family are breathing clean air today by giving Vision Air Solutions a call today. 803-220-1811. That's 803-220-1811. Tell them Mike sent you.
Love it when the leaders call, the pack is moving past. Love it when they're making lots and lots of noise. Can't wait to hear these doors.
Boys at the Monster Mile at Dover as we continue with this NASCAR season. But let me interject here very quickly a couple of important items. South Carolina, Auburn 1-1, bottom of the first. Gamecocks are batting, runners on second and third, two out. And we've had the first two picks of the night in the NFL draft completed. And Will Levis didn't have to wait very long. He went with the 33rd pick, second pick of the round, to Tennessee. Before him, Joey Porter Jr., the corner out of Penn State, goes to the Steelers. Okay, let's welcome in now as we turn our attention to NASCAR. Coming off of the race at Talladega, we go to Dover. Jeff Owens joins us now. We're going from the Monster Track to the Monster Mile. But Talladega was fantastic if you like danger. And we saw danger there at the very end.
Yeah, good race, Phil, I thought. You know, it was a bit unusual because it was pretty tame for a while there. Not a lot of cautions early in the race, but all heck broke loose at the end, like we're accustomed to down there, some big wrecks and that sort of mixed the field up. And good finish, I thought. Man, you feel bad for Ryan Blaney and Bubba Wallace both going for a victory there at the end, and they get into each other and wreck each other, and it falls right in Kyle Busch's lap. So, dramatic finish. I thought the race was good. I mean, it's kind of what you expect at Talladega, and I think it delivered again.
Yeah, Kyle Busch, I mean, he's won so many races, but the super speedways have not always been his best spots, have they?
No, not really. In fact, he's never won the Daytona 500. Not sure if he's ever won at Talladega until last week. I'm sure he probably has, but you're right. That he's typically one of the guys that almost always gets in a crash. So maybe that's a sign that he's going to get some luck this year because, you know, he did a great job putting himself in position, and then he took advantage when the leaders wrecked each other. So sometimes that's what you got to do. And he climbs out of the car and says sometimes you got to be lucky instead of good, and that's exactly what happened for him. So he's got two wins right now in that Richard Childress car, so pretty good start for Kyle Busch on what I think is going to be a pretty good season for him.
Mm-hmm.
And, Jeff, speaking of Kyle Busch, if it's not for his track record as good as he is a driver, does he actually, maybe somebody, a younger driver, do they listen to their team and go in to pit late in the overtime to get fuel? Because he was running on fumes, there's no question, but he ignored his team, stayed out, obviously paid big dividends for him. But can a younger driver make that call as easily as a veteran driver like Busch?
Yeah, I don't think so. If you're a young guy, you're not gonna overrule your crew chief. But if you're Kyle Busch, you can do what you want. I mean, he's got the street cred to back it up. And, and Kyle is as stubborn as they come. You know, he's rebuffed more than a few crew chiefs in his career. And this one worked out in his favor. I mean, he knew what he had. I guess he took a big gamble there, but it certainly paid off. And he runs out of gas on the victory lap there. You know, he couldn't even do a burnout because he'd run out of gas. But great call on his part. I would be curious to know what his crew chief had to say after that race. But but he was right, and it worked out, and he gets the win.
I asked you this when the incident happened with Chase Elliott and he got injured snowboarding, and we talked about what Rick Hendrick should do with his drivers. Does the Alex Bowman now, with him getting hurt in a sprint car accident, he's going to miss a month. Does it finally come home that Rick Hendrick's got to do something, at least contractually with his drivers, to tell them you are paid for 10 months to work for me and nothing else?
Yeah, it may well, Chris. And here's an interesting backstory on this. You know, Rick Hendrick used to prohibit his guys from doing this. Back in the day, you never saw Jeff Gordon go race a sprint car somewhere. He was prohibited contractually from doing that. Same thing with Jimmy Johnson. But when they hired Kyle Busch in 2021, or Kyle Larson, I'm sorry, in 2021, one of the stipulations that Kyle wanted in his contract was that he could go run sprint cars and dirt tracks and whatever he wanted to do. And he goes to Hendrick, and the year he won his championship, he ran like 80 sprint car races that year. So I got to think now, you know, two guys this year have gotten hurt, Alex Bowman in a sprint car. I got to think that Rick Hendrick is probably going to rethink that contract, I believe.
Yeah, makes sense. Jeff, as always, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week. Jeff Owens in the Fast Lane with us here on Sports Talk.
Four! Straight down the middle. It went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day.
It is time to get on to those fairways and those greens and those tees of the state of South Carolina and other points beyond. It's time for birdies and bogeys and biceps around the state of South Carolina. George Bryan joins us. He brings the birdies. I bring the bogeys. I'd be happy with a bogey. Sometimes I bring a double bogey. Most times I bring a triple bogey. And Robbie Thames, not with us tonight. He brings the biceps. So between George and I, we have a special guest, and maybe he'll bring the biceps to the conversation. Let me update a couple of things real quick before we welcome George in. They're playing down in Mexico on the PGA Tour, the Mexico Open at Vedanta. And your leader right now is Tony Finau, a 64, puts him at 13 under. Eric Van Ruin, a 66, puts him at 12 under. Andrew Putnam, Will Gordon, Eric Cole, Austin Smotherman, Brandon Wu, they are all at 9 under par. That's the top of your leaderboard. And we got some locals. We got Ben Martin after a 66. He's at 8 under. We got John Rahm. He's not local, but we claim him. 68, he's at 7 under. Jonathan Burge at 5 under. He's still on the course. Andrew Novak, a 72. He's 3 under. We got Bill Haas with a 71. He's 2 under. Carson Young is on the course at 2 under. Will McGirt, he is even after a 67. Kyle Stanley is even after a 69. Lucas Glover is even after a 71. Doc Redman is even after a 72. Scott Brown is even, playing his last hole. Tommy Gainey is even. He's on the course. DJ Trahan plus one after a 72. And Wesley Bryan plus 8. After a 79, a very nice 71 to open things up, but a 79 this afternoon as we welcome in GB3. He's on the tee. George?
Oh, good evening. And, yeah, that I'm pulling for Tommy Gainey to birdie the last couple of holes to make that cut 2 under. Pretty good score, and that's what they do out there on that PGA Tour. It's really, really nice to see Jay Bird on the right side and in contention. So he's one that I watched right here in town grow up. A little younger than, a little older than Jay Bird is another guy I watched grow up. And Coach Robert Dargan will join us. He's, I think he's on the tee. And Phil, I'll tell you what, he's fun to talk to. I like to go ahead and, as we will miss Tsunami Robbie, he had one of his buddies, his boat broke down. One of his buddies' boat broke down on the lake, and Tsunami Robbie is out rescuing. So,
is he taking a tsunami bar and stretching it out, and he's grabbing it and pulling him in with the tsunami? I mean, the tsunami bar is a miracle bar. You can use it for a lot of different things.
Oh, and I, you know, you never can tell. He could be doing that. It is magical. You're right about that. And I'm not sure what tactic he'll use. But he's got the right kind of heart to go get his buddy off the lake broken down. We'll find out about it next week.
And okay.
This past week, I saw Coach Dargan out getting his team ready for the Southern Cross, and we'll go ahead and bring him on the tee. Let's tee it up with Coach Robert Dargan, head coach for AC Flora. Welcome, Coach. How you doing?
Thanks, George. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And, Phil, thank you for listening to all those guys, all of our local guys. That is awesome to hear all those guys, and I know most of them. And what a testament to the South Carolina Golf Association and the South Carolina Golf Association and the University of South Carolina Golf and Clemson Golf and all the other schools. And also, too, and George Bryan has played a big part in all those guys, not just his kids, but a lot of those guys' development. George was right there in the middle of it, and that's certainly a really cool thing, and that's awesome to see.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear.
Well, we talked – Hey, Robert, Coach, we talked. Yep. Phil and I spoke quite a bit about you in our early stages of developing this radio game. And I tell you, when we on the radio show, Phil and I, we got big radio golf game. So, but you were in the very beginning. Teddy Hefner, actually, Teddy and I probably spoke more about you than Phil and I. But the way it was back in the day, in order for Phil and I to speak about you, or at least for me to bring it up, you had to be playing at that national level. The local yep. stuff is where Teddy and I spoke of you. So Phil's in the middle of it, and it's been fun watching what you have just mentioned. It's a lot of fun. And you had some action going on this past week. I want you to elaborate. It's a fun – so I read about it. Wasn't there at Palmetto. Palmetto is one of the best courses in the state. And last time I saw you, you were qualifying. You were qualifying. You're fifth guy.
Mm.
Take it away.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had a great season, and we've got a bunch of good players. And it's kind of a blessing and a curse to have so many good players because – unfortunately, you can't take everybody to the tournaments, and you kind of got to sometimes put them in a little bit of a qualifying situation, decide who goes. And I have a lot of kids that are very deserving and that play for AC Flora, and we're very fortunate to have that. So, yes, Southern Cross at Palmetto Golf Club, and for the old folks out there that don't know about it, it's the fifth oldest golf course in the United States in Aiken, South Carolina. It's just fabulous. And when you step on the grounds there, once you walk behind the clubhouse, it's like you went back in time 50 years. It's just lovely. And it's just, I mean, it's one of those places that's just magical to me. If you like golf, it's just phenomenal. And they had this high school tournament, Southern Cross. I used to play back I started playing in 1982 when I was in seventh grade. And it's been the best high school tournament that I can possibly think of anywhere, honestly. And you get a great field. You get great players. The membership embraces it. Really makes it just a phenomenal event. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, because we didn't lose, we got beat, and there's a big difference there. Flora finished one shot short of Bishop England. With Bishop England, there's no slouch here. They won a bunch of state championships. They're private school, but they play in the 3A ranks, but this year they're 2A. Oceanside is one of the, it's like the Gray Academy, a great collegiate of Charleston. They have an excellent golf team, too, and they're a 2A school as well. So those are the Oceanside won state last year in 3A, and Bishop England finished second. They should be going head-to-head again this year. And they're an outstanding team. They've always got a couple of kids that are going to play in college. And we came up one shot short. We had Adam Hunt, our senior, all-state, three-time all-state player, who had about a 30-foot birdie putt on the last hole. And Adam's going to University of Illinois next year to play golf. And outstanding player, been a key guy for us in seventh grade. We're going to miss him a lot. And he left it hanging on the lip. I thought he made it. I really did. And just literally like half a rotation were going in. And then the young man from Bishop England who's going to Clemson, or one of those schools. He's a good player, very good player. He had about a five-footer to win, and he calmly struck in right in the middle. So, you know, that's one of those things you just go shake the hands and say, well done. And they got us by one this year, and hopefully we'll get them next time. You know, but it was a great fight. It was in the true spirit of the game, which is really cool to watch these young men compete like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Phil, so Coach Dargan, I had the chance the last 6-7 days to spend time with you, Greg McBride over at Northwoods. These names are in the foundation of how South Carolina junior golf has gotten so strong. But Freddie Wadsworth, who coaches the Hammond team, watched him coach his players this past week over Myrtle Beach at the SCISA state championship. That Mike Fanning with athletic, the head of the SCISA Athletic Association, he runs a great event, the Hackler course. And then Tommy Ganey was over watching his son play golf. So I'm watching and listening every chance I get. I pull these great players aside and ask them to either I'm watching, observing what they're doing with their team, and if they take a break, I'll recruit them and ask them to say a few things to any of the kids around. And it's just a beautiful setting. Hey, Coach, would you just educate the folks listening about the way high school golf operates. We got private schools, we got public schools, 1, 2, 3, yep. 4A, even 5A. Would you just give us a little background on that, please?
Absolutely. Yes, you have Skeezer, which is the private schools, and their season runs a little shorter than ours, us being a Florida being a public school. So they just have their state, and Trinity Collegiate out of Darlington won. They're a multiple-time state champion as well. And then some of the private schools will actually petition and compete in the public schools, like Bishop Engelman and let's see what else. There's a few other ones. Porter Gown does too. Now, Porter Gown did private. They finished second, I think. But you have a couple private schools. Christ Church up in Greenville is also an excellent school. They'll play up. Then you have a 1A, a 2A, a 3A, a 4A, and a 5A. And they each have their own tournament now. They used to combine the tournaments and have like a kind of an overall deal, but now they have enough participation in the smaller high schools where, you know, South Carolina is a great golf state. You have so many young men playing golf. The one thing, like, George, I think you would agree with this, like when we were coming up, there weren't that many kids playing golf. There's so many kids playing golf and young ladies that it's just awesome. And, you know, golf's such a – I mean, obviously I love the game of golf, and I'm very passionate about it. That's one of the reasons I got into coaching, to help give back. And but they have so many people playing golf now, and it's cool. And, there's very few positives I can take from the pandemic. I can't think of only one off the top of my head, actually. But one is the participation in golf. There are a lot of sports that the kids couldn't play, and people started gravitating to golf to get out. And so there's no more social distancing sport than golf. And it really did benefit the clubs, and the game of golf in general. So we've got a lot of young people playing golf. And George is being modest because he didn't tell you that he's helping coach the what is it, George? What school is it? Tell me again.
Ben Lippin. I'm on the coaches.
And he would not tell that. He coached Columbia University for years. George is like the Swiss Army knife of golf. He in South Carolina. If there's something to help junior golfers, he's there. And he would not tell people that. But, you know, obviously everybody knows Wesley and George Jr. played at such a high level. Wesley went in the Heritage, and his daughter was an outstanding player too. It's funny how he had three kids, and they're all great players. It says a lot about his ability to coach. And you have an awesome junior program, and guys like you are just difference makers. And sometimes you don't really see that until later on down the road. But if you look back at all these kids that are competing at a high level now, it's pretty neat to say that you were a part of that. And that's in Hap Lathrop and all the guys in the Golf Association who built this. You know, we had the Palmetto Cup matches years ago, and where the amateurs play the pros, and Hap mentioned about everyone, y'all guys are all good players. You'll have a chance to get back to the game. And I was in my 20s. I didn't know what he was talking about. And when this opportunity came, they asked me to coach AC Flora. Coach Harry Huntley was retiring, and I was like, I guess I could do that. I know a little bit about golf. I could help. And that's what he was talking about. And it really has been a – you know, it's hours and it's labor-intensive sometimes, but it's really been a joy to be around these young kids. You feel like you're helping them achieve their goals. And the Flora program has been, you know, it was a strong program before I ever got there, and they're just getting better. And I don't feel like – and I always feel like I can brag on them because they were good before I ever got there, but they're just – you know, there's no shortcuts in golf. I thought that one of the cool things about when they had the kit, the pros talking on TV now in round, you know, they're talking about their round, the Masters and the Heritage, they mic them up, and I think that's a really neat thing. But the one thing I took from that, I told our kids, is like, there's no secrets. There's no shortcuts. It's hard work, and it's time-consuming, and you got to put the work in, and if you do, you're going to get good. If you don't, you won't. It's really that simple. And I thought that was a really cool thing to see the guys at the highest level talk about the same things we think about. It's just they're just a little better than we are, but we're still talking about the same thing. So,
and speaking of better, one of the first things, I don't know if you remember this name, Larry Boswell. He's a Hall of Fame in the Carolinas.
Outstanding player.
And so
coached Irmo, correct?
He did at Irmo, and when I started playing. Yeah. I had no game. Anybody starting out doesn't play very well, and I was in that category, but he could feel my passion, but he's the first one that talked to me about, if you want to get better, watch better players. Watch them closely, and then if you can, practice with them. So
yes, no doubt.
Had the privilege of learning right from the very beginning, and I would oftentimes, most of the time, much like now, although I'm not – my ball, when I stand over a ball, Robert, I'm swinging at it, but it's not a lot of playing involved. But I do watch. I watch really good. I watch really good. It just doesn't translate.
I'm in touch with that emotion, too, now. I really am. Yeah, Larry Boswell he won a ton of stuff, and I played with him a few times when I was younger. And you're right; it really, I mean, it's just you gotta. It's being around better. I was fortunate that my dad was an excellent golfer, and David and us. I've always said I never took a formal lesson, but I probably took 1,000 lessons because I played with him and I played with better players when I was a little kid, and y'all guys were in college. The Carolina guys played out at Wildwood where I grew up, and I would play with them. Y'all would include me in that, and that was so cool. And I mean, I was appreciative of that more than you'll ever know. And but my dad always told me, he goes, "If you want to get good, you got to get your brains beat in." And what he meant by that was, I go play with better players, usually older players, and I would get crushed sometimes. But that's just part of the deal. It made me better in the long run. And my dad would always say, "Don't play with people that you're going to beat up on. Play with people that you're going to have to play your best to beat or compete with." And that was, and I always tell her, I mean, everything I tell the AC Flora boys and girls team really is like my dad, what my dad told me. My dad passed away in 2005 and at 64, so too young for sure. But I feel like in a way he's coaching this team because he tells everything he's told me and David. David's helped me too with both teams. I didn't mention that, but then my little brother, David Dargan, who's not so young, he's 49, so still my little brother. And but he played golf at College of Charleston. He's an outstanding player too. And everything we tell these kids and the other coaches that help us is that it's stuff that my dad told me. And it's pretty good advice. And you got to challenge yourself. And then unfortunately in golf, it's never static. Either you're getting better or you're getting worse. And if you're not getting better, you're probably getting worse. And so I like getting better than getting worse. And so I will touch on our team this year. We've had a great season. We've had 5 wins, and which is good. They've won the last 2 state 4A championships. We're playing North Augusta this year. North Augusta's hosting the River Club. They've finished second to us the last 2 years. So it's going to be quite a challenge for us to do it. But I think that Phil, and I'll know you're going to like this. Flora has won 17 state championships, and somebody else, one of our favorite teams, has won 17 world championships. It'd be kind of cool if we both won 18 in the same year. Well, I'm talking about our Celtics. They were on last night.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I have to be impartial when it comes to the in-state teams. I love them all. But, if you happen to coincide with the Celtics winning number 18, I can be happy for that. Yes, sir.
That's what I've been telling our kids all year. I was like, we got Ric Flair has won 16, the Celtics won 18. And we're at 17, so let's go and get the Celtics are going to win. We're tied with the Celtics.
That's right.
The Celtics are going to win this year. If we get by Philly, and I think we are because we got Philly's number, and we're going to let Embiid score 40, and then we're going to shut everybody else down. And I think that that'd be a cool thing for Flora to be able to do the same. And so, but it's going to be a challenge. We still haven't finalized our roster yet. Normally after spring break, which was 2 weeks ago, you kind of know who your top 5 guys are going to be. And due to our depth, we've got we're going to take a different number 5 guy to the region next week, different number 5 guy to the lower state, which will be in Florence, and then we're going to decide who goes to state. And then we'll take 7 to state for a couple alternate players in case somebody is injured or something happens. But I expect that the 5 to start, probably the 5 that'll finish. That's usually the case, but I think last year we at Forest Lake hosted, which was neat because Forest Lake is most of these kids' home course to play on the Flora team. And we shot 565, which won by like 40 shots, which was nice. We played really good. And that set the state 4A scoring record by 3 shots in the history of the state. I think it's going to take somewhere in the neighborhood of 550 this year to win. North Augusta is a really good team, and we're going to have to be – And they're a nice bunch of guys too. We get along with them. We played a lot of golf with them. So, but we're gonna have to be at our best, and it should be quite a battle there. It should be fun. And that's all you want. You want to be competitive. You want, if you win, to have to play your best to win. That's the way I look at it.
Well, I love how you guys just bounce back and forth between basketball, right back into golf, and and I like that kind of exercise in gymnastics. And then one thing I'm always intrigued with, Coach, and I've heard different philosophies about trying to get your team's head right for such an event. See, you got team where 5 for 4, that's what you take five players play, but only 4 scores count.
Correct.
Now, do you coach your players to play individually, or do you coach your players to think more team, playing conservative, aggressive? What's your take? What's your philosophy?
My philosophy is the philosophy that we had at South Carolina that I think is good, is that, you know, golf is such an individual sport. Everybody swings the club differently. Everybody's body type's differently. And unfortunately or fortunately, I think fortunately in my opinion, everybody's mind's different. Everybody looks at things a little differently sometimes. So we'll go through the golf course. We'll play a couple of practice rounds. We'll talk about what we're going to do. And then I'll make suggestions of how we play certain holes. But then it's situational because, you know, the wind might be different. The weather's different. The tees are different. I was like, in certain holes, if they're 3 or 4 under par, they're playing good, they got a little house money, then maybe get a little more aggressive. The big thing with junior golf, I think you'll agree with this. I hope you will, or I wouldn't say it, but is that a lot of times in junior golf, the worse a young man or young lady plays, the more aggressive they get. And then, like, if you were to take, I'm saying we had Wesley on here, we'd ask him, usually the better you play, the more aggressive you get. And then when you're not playing your best, you take maybe a little more conservative approach. So it's really situational. The big thing we always try to stress is real simple golf, is fairways, greens, and putts. Our goal is, my goal when I play around the golf, I don't hit this every time, but my goal when I play around the golf is to hit 10 fairways out of 14, hit 14 greens out of 18, and have 29 or fewer putts. If you two putt every hole, it's 36 putts. If you add that up, that's usually about 68.
Oh, well, give me that math one more time. I've never really.
Okay. Yeah.
Give me that math one more and do it slowly.
Yes, sir. 10 fairways, 14 greens, and 29 or fewer putts. And then also, too, Phil, this is another one I like to look at. My dad, maybe, and Steve Liebler, who's my coach in South Carolina. Par threes. Everybody thinks they should birdie par threes. You know, par threes are usually the hardest holes on the course. A guy who wins a tour event usually plays the par threes about even par for the tournament. And my dad always told me threes are like $20 bills. You can't get enough of them. They're already giving you 4 already. Hit the ball in the middle of the green, make a 3. If you can make 6 threes in a round, you're going to shoot in the 60s usually. So they're giving you 4, so take them. And then make 2 more somewhere, and then that's the round. So the whole thing we try to get is like all these young people get so – and I'm guilty of this too, everybody – is you get score consumed. The score is the byproduct of what you're doing. So get process consumed. Let's worry about the shot at hand. Let's get the ball on the fairway. Let's hit the green. The score is 4 hours from now. We'll worry about that later. If you do the right things, it'll all add up. And so you try to get them thinking in those terms and playing to their strengths, and then they usually play good. And they start thinking, you know, they get score consumed like, oh, I'm already 5 over par. I got a par and to shoot 77. You know, that's 2 hours from now. Let's worry about getting the ball on the fairway. And so you try to bring them into the present, really. You know, let's worry. The past is the past. I made a double bogey 10 minutes ago. Let's not affect the next 30 minutes of my life. Let's worry about right now. And so you always kind of remind them of that. And there's not a lot of coaching in golf. There really isn't. Hopefully the coaching or the talking to has been done beforehand, because if you're coaching in the round, you probably got some problems. You know, it's probably going to go south pretty quickly.
We
try to discuss it with them, lay out a plan. And then I always tell them, if you need me, you give me a hand signal and I'll come in. And every once in a while, if I see they need me, they don't realize it, I'll come in and talk to them. But usually it's just to be an encourager and say, you know, hey, sometimes if they're playing bad, I'll be like, hey, so how about Clemson? We'll talk about anything but golf. You know, take their mind off of that. Get them relaxed and get them to where they're not so stressed out. And then let's just go play, you know?
Well,
that's kind of
Coach,
that's my philosophy.
That's absolutely beautiful. It'll be fun having you on in a couple of weeks, and we can talk more about how the state event went. We got less than 40 seconds now, and I want to thank you for being part of the show. I had my pen and paper out taking notes. I liked what you had to say, and look forward to.
George, I think you told me that one time. I learned it from probably you 4 years ago.
I doubt it. I think Phil might have shared that, but your coach Steve was awesome. And hey, Robert, what a pleasure. Have a good weekend. Look forward to our next visit. Phil, like always, enjoyed it. Tee 'em high. Have some fun this weekend, but shoot 'em low.
Thank you, guys. Fantastic. Quick baseball. Boston College beats Clemson 3-1. Auburn leads the Gamecocks 3-1. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, everybody. Yes, have a great weekend. See you Monday night here on Sports Talk.